When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's up? Bar Down Breakdown. We're back and we're here very, very astoundingly fantastic artist. We're here with Gus Hymus, as in, hi, this is my messy room. All right, we'll take it. There it is. That's the mess. But Gus is one of the artists at Torch Tattoo out in Anaheim, California. Huge hockey fan, huge alternative music fan. So why the hell wouldn't we have him on? So we're stoked to have you, Gus. Thank you so much for being with us. And welcome to the mess that is not only my room, but the Bar Down Breakdown podcast. By the way, we're on Twitch now. I don't know if that means anything to anybody, but if you're out there twitching, you'll find us. But Gus, man, thank you. Thank you for being on here, man. What's going on?
Oh, gladly. Thank you guys so much for having me. Super stoked to be on it. Love what you guys do. So glad it finally worked out. We got to make it happen.
Hell yeah, man. This is awesome. You know, I think this is actually the first time we've ever had someone really from like the artistry space specifically. It's really going to be cool to chat with you and just kind of like get a different perspective just because, you know, we talk to a lot of, you know, musicians and bands and all that kind of stuff. And that side, know, of the artist landscape is really cool, but your side of it is definitely something we'd love to hear about. So definitely pumped to have you on. Yeah, man, for sure. So let's kind of start. I want to start at the beginning. So at what point did you decide that, you know, you wanted to be a tattoo artist? Like kind of how did you jump into that space?
Yeah. Honestly, didn't happen till maybe a little later, I guess still early, end of teenage years, like 18, 19, when I started getting tattooed. Mm-hmm. The first tattoo I got, I was 17 years old. I got it from a friend's uncle who already sounds sketchy. It wasn't. he owned a shop. He was a tattooer for like at least 10 years at that point. So I knew he was like reputable or whatever, but he was like, yeah, you're 17. I'll do it for you. So like once I got the first one, got the second one, kind of got into the tattoo culture, that just kind of hooked me. And if you get tattooed enough, you kind of learn the ins and outs of the shop and like whose place is where, like, oh, that's the counter guy or that's the apprentice or whatever. But once I kind of learned more and more about the history of it, like I respected the history so much and I loved it, fell in love with that. Plus like everything from like the romantic side of tattooing, like when you would get a tattoo for the person you love or your mom or all that. I just loved anything like that. So that's kind of what got me into tattooing, is just getting tattooed. Honestly, I'd always loved doing artwork. My technical like art background is graffiti. So that kind of just goes hand in hand with tattooing nowadays. But yeah, getting tattooed definitely made me realize, like, man, I love this industry. I love just like the culture of it, and I want to be a part of it. And that's awesome. Where it kind of spawned from there. Yeah.
Cool. And then another question, just out of curiosity again, because, you know, you're the first person in your industry, you know, to be on the show. So,
for sure.
I think a lot of people, if you're in the, like, again, like you talked about, if you're in the tattoo, like, industry and you're in the culture, there's probably a deep appreciation, very much a deep appreciation for what you do. But for people that really don't understand that, the whole, like, conceptualization phase is something that for me personally blows my mind, right? Because I've been a musician for all my life. So, you know, I know a lot of people are like, how the hell do you, you know, have an idea and then flesh it out into an entire song, right? Like, that's a crazy thing.
Right.
But for you, you know, like, you have someone come into the shop and they're like, all right, man, like, this is what I want. Like, I want this tiger and then I want these roses and I want this and that. And now all of a sudden you have to be like, okay. And now you have to put it on paper and you have to, like, flesh this whole thing out. So from that perspective, like, tell me a little bit about, like, the painstaking work that goes into that, because I mean, I'm sure you've probably had your hand in some people that have wanted some really gnarly and crazy stuff. So, like, how does that work for you in terms of, like, you know, the enormity of your brain when you're like, all right, man, I gotta put this to paper and then put it on someone's body, you know? So how does that work for you?
It's very stressful. it's weird. It's either extremely stressful or it's like, this is amazing and it just flows right out of you. It just depends. It's more so people's ideas. Sometimes they just need a little bit of guidance. Like, it's not that their ideas are horrible. It's just that you're like, well, that's not exactly realistic. Like, somebody will say, take a tiger. Like, I want a front facing tiger, but I also want it to be like, but I kind of want it three quarters, but not fully three quarters, but more front facing. And at that point, it's just like, go one way or the other. Like, there's no in between. Like, that doesn't make sense. You're going to have a wonky eyed looking tiger. Like, the angle is going to be off. Like, so it's kind of hard to, some people will let you be creative with it. Some people are strictly like, this is exactly what I want. There's a little bit of give and take with both situations. But I've just kind of come to the terms where, like, if I just don't think it's going to look good, personally don't want to do it, because I mean, that's my name on there, but also if I'm not fully invested, do you really want me doing it? You know, like, it's just a bit of a give and take, a little bit of a dance. And then there's always going to be revisions. Like, anytime I draw something the first time, it's not always what they wanted, but maybe sometimes they see it, they're like, oh, I didn't think of it that way. That's actually pretty rad. I would prefer that instead of my original idea. Or you get the opposite and they just want closer to something that they had in mind. And then you try to work with them. I'm pretty lucky though. Most of the people that get tattooed by me, we're kind of on the same page and don't get a ton of, like, backlash, you know? Most people that get tattooed by me definitely trust me. So I appreciate that big time.
All right. So we got a question for you then from our homies and Out of Time.
Oh,
what's the worst tattoo you had come through the shop?
Oh man. The worst one? It's weird. Luckily these days, I don't have a ton of, like, horror stories, but I would say that, oh, actually, this ended up saving itself, but somebody was getting a tattoo, cool image, an eagle with lyrics. And I'm like, cool. Right in my wheelhouse. Love this. Wrote the lyrics out, put the stencil on the person, and I knew I have a friend in this band. So I sent him a photo of it before I did it. And I was like, oh, he'll appreciate this. Sent it to him. And he replied right away. He was like, hey, that's rad, but those are the wrong lyrics. And I was like, what? Yeah. I was like, what do you mean? He's like, it's not this, it's this. And then sent me like the lyrics. And I was like, oh my God. And I hadn't tattooed it yet. Luckily, it was just a stencil. So I was like, I told my client, like, hey, do you know that this is wrong? And she was like, yeah, I didn't want to say anything because I didn't want you to like have to redraw it. I'm like, you kidding me? Like, you think it would have been better if I did the tattoo and like had it permanently wrong? Like, no way, we're changing it right now. And then she's like, how did you notice? I'm like, I sent it to my friend in the band and he corrected me. So now I have to correct it. So while it's not the worst thing that's come through the shop, it's like a horrible feeling that I got. That's probably the worst I've ever felt, like, because it almost happened. I try and be so like triple check any words, any names, any dates. Like, I ask the person to the point where they get annoyed because I never want to have that horror story. So luckily, knock on wood, nothing too crazy.
Now, is your friend Elton John, and was the wrong lyric "Hold Me Closer, Tony Danza"?
It was. Holy crap! You figured it out.
I had a feeling.
Listen, that's a tattoo that I would positively get on myself, just like a portrait of Tony Danza, and it just said "Hold Me Closer, Tony Danza." Why not?
This week.
Awesome. Let's do it. So, that's kind of another, another interesting question. With with tattoo artists, and especially with people who are really sought after, I know back in New York, there are like a handful of artists that are kind of like the premier artists in their space when it comes to they're more like traditional stuff or modern stuff. And sometimes, I mean, those guys are booked out like years at a time. So like, I'm sure you kind of in your space, having the pedigree that you do, how do you deal with that? Like, do you find sometimes, like, when you're like, you know, like the enormity of your scope of work, like when you look at your calendar and you have jobs 9 months out, like what does that feel like in your chest? Like, is that like, oh, that's great because I know I have steady income, or, oh my God, like I'm never going to get a day off. Like, how does that look for you?
So honestly, for me, before COVID, I was trying to tattoo as much as I could.
Okay.
Once we had to shut down, it definitely hit like a pivot point where I got to work on a lot of other things outside of tattooing because we were closed for so long. And then when we went back to tattooing, everybody at the shop was already a busy tattooer, but everyone's schedule just skyrocketed. And I personally felt kind of like, you know what, this is kind of my chance to keep doing something outside of tattooing, but still tattoo as well.
Sure.
And I kind of rather step back a little bit from tattooing and only do one, maybe two a day, and not book out super far in advance anymore, because I'm as single as they come, as far as like, I have no kids, no like girlfriend or wife or anything like that. So only thing I really have to worry about is like what I'm going to do for that day, or, you know, like stuff like that. So I like having that freedom. And when people book out, when like friends of mine or coworkers of mine book out months and months and months in advance, that's great. But for me, I kind of like having a little bit of that free time, and something comes up, or whether it's like going to a Ducks game or going to a show or stuff like that. I'd like to have that freedom. Doesn't mean I'm not working, you know, it just means like mentally it helps me out so much, and it makes me feel way more creative to have that free space to kind of go do, especially going to shows. Like, went to a show last night and instantly felt super inspired to go draw stuff already. So I'm just like, yeah, this is great. I needed this time off to just think of stuff for future work, you know?
Nice.
So personally, I enjoy having some freedom. I don't like booking out super far in advance, because especially like with COVID, like, you never know.
It's true.
If, you know, like we shut down several times, and we would book out appointments for weeks and months, and then we got shut down like a week later. So it's like, well, now I got to reschedule all that again. So personally, I'm not a fan of booking too far out. I like booking like a month out, and then just go from there. That's good with me.
Yeah. What show did you go see?
It's this band called The Midnight. They are like, it's super hard to explain what they are, but have you ever seen the movie Drive?
I have not.
Ryan Gosling.
I'm familiar with it, but I yeah, I
the
don't
soundtrack
think I've
seen it, yeah. is very 80s synth, new wave, retro.
Okay.
And that's what The Midnight is.
Okay.
They're rad. Just super cool. Awesome. Like perfect driving music at night.
Nice.
Love so, yeah, to hear. They put on a great show, put on an amazing light show too. And it was awesome.
Awesome. Yeah.
So I guess I love to talk crossovers. So okay. Obviously there's a huge crossover with like dudes from the alternative music world, you know, just historically they get tattooed. Like, yeah. I'm sure you've tattooed a bunch of like dudes in your favorite bands.
True.
But
yeah.
There's also like now like the new wave of hockey players in the NHL.
Oh yeah.
Are starting to get tattooed. So like, has that happened since, you know, you're right in Anaheim and you know, the Ducks are down the road. Like have any Ducks or even guys that like maybe are playing the Ducks are in town for a day or two and like are hitting you up like, yo, I want to get you to, you know, tattoo us.
For sure.
Or tattoo me.
So funny enough. So our shop is literally on the same street as Honda Center where the Ducks play. We're on Catella. So it's super close. Funny enough, not tattooed as many hockey players, but I have been tattooed by several of the Ducks players.
Come again.
So, yes. the first one to do it was Matt Bolesky. So he was on the Ducks. That all happened very randomly. He made a bet with some friends that he would score a goal at the Ducks LA Kings say outdoor stadium game, and if he did, they would have to get his number tattooed, and if he didn't, he would have to like take them out to dinner or something like that. So he ended up scoring like a super greasy goal, and they just like, my friends looked at each other and were like, oh, we're getting Bolesky tattoos now. So they came to me and were like, hey, can you do a 39 on us? And I'm like, yeah, for sure. And Matt was like, oh, I'm going to come with you guys. So he came. And at that time, I don't think he might have had like one or two tattoos, but I know he was still kind of new to the tattoo world. So he was asking me questions while I was doing it. He's like, hey, so how do you do this? Or how do you know when to blah, blah, blah? And I'm like, oh, you feel it and you run this, blah, whatever. So I was like, would you want to do one? And he's like, what do you mean? I'm like, I don't know. You want to do a little 39 on my leg somewhere? And he was like, sure. So he's like, I don't know what to do. How do I write it? And I'm like, just write it out like you would on your stick. Just a simple 39. So he did that on a piece of paper, made a stencil, put it on my leg. And then he tattooed it. I kind of just told him what to do. And dude, he was like, it looks great, by the way. It's held up incredibly well. And then after that, that kind of just became a thing between like me and some friends. And then a couple other Ducks players kind of heard about it and like they became buds as well. And so I've had a couple other guys do it too.
I was not expecting the story to go that way.
Oh yeah. It's funny because the second one to do it was actually Josh Manson. Is still on the Ducks, and that was cool because Josh is a great dude. He did the same thing, just a 42, the way he writes it on a stick. His is extremely clean, and he even like, dude, after he did it, he was kind of like, I think I could clean this line up. And I'm like, damn, all right. And dude, it's honestly a perfect tattoo. It's crazy. But that was cool because even the Ducks even got in on it, and Fox Sports West at the time came and filmed it all. And it was like on Ducks Weekly after the game, bar down. Like it blew up. It was wild. I was not expecting that at all. But Josh is a great dude, super cool homie, and I was stoked to get it done.
That is unbelievable.
I just wonder when when you were getting that 39 on you, like that first, mm-hmm. like when he first put that to your leg, He's probably like, all right, so like this. And you were like, holy shit, that's inside my whole leg.
Funny enough, the third person to do it is George Peros. So he's the third one to do it. And George is a great friend. He's an awesome dude. He was like, I had fun with him because I was the closest to him at that point. So he did a number 16 with a mustache. I was with Hammer, my friend Hammer from mm-hmm. By the Gentleman. Sure. And Hammer's like, you should mess with him. And I'm like what? He's all, you should pretend it hurts really bad. And I'm like, oh, good call. So he's like, all right. George is like, you ready? I'm like, yeah, go for it, dude. He did the first line. I just yell out, oh shit. He's like, he just laughed. He's like, ah, yeah, right. And just kept going.
That's
so that was fun.
Love that. He just like called your bluff. He's like, this man is.
Yeah. He's like,
he's full.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. But that, now, those are great times.
What a hell of a story.
Now, when you see like dudes in the NHL, even like superstars now.
Yeah.
Covered in tattoos. Like, how does that make you feel as a tattoo artist that like, you know, these professional athletes are now embracing mm-hmm. your craft where, you know, 15, 20 years ago, there was a whole different stigma about tattoos.
Oh, yeah. Tattooing in general has just become, it sounds bad, but it's not. Like, it's just become so mainstream. Like, everyone has tattoos. Like, doctors, lawyers, like, it doesn't matter. It's not like the scum of the earth have tattoos now.
Yeah.
You know, everyone's got tattoos. It's more rare to meet someone without a tattoo these days, you know, mm-hmm. than it is not. So,
yeah, I think there's something to be said about like the way the world in general, or I mean, let's truncate it down and just talk about America because you know, we live here. But like, you know, there's something to be said about tattoos, you know, again, yeah, like moving away from being something that was like scandalous or or this or that, and now just kind of becoming part of the norm. I even remember I probably my first job in retail, I think I was working at Best Buy when I was like 18 mm-hmm. or 19. And I remember even then, if you had tattoos on your arms, they were like, oh, gotta wear long sleeves or
totally,
you know, or gotta cover these things up or whatever. And and even then I thought that was like the dumbest thing. I was like, what's unprofessional about art, agreed. You know? But nowadays, I mean, like a lot of, there are still, I think some restaurants, some like, you know, hoity toity, I guess you'd call them restaurants that are like, but like for the most part, you know, now places are embracing the fact that people, again, you know, this is an artist using, mm-hmm. you know, using your body as a canvas. Right. So, I mean, it's really no different to me than someone who collects paintings and hangs them up in their home. Right. Right.
Yeah,
there's no difference. So now, you know, I'm loving that, you know, more places in retail and in workspaces are embracing the fact that there's nothing wrong with tattoos. So I think that's a great thing. So, but have you ever, you know, is that something that like you ever have experienced, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, I could see covered in tattoos. Like, have you ever experienced, you know, that kind of stigma or someone kind of looking at you funny?
To be honest, not since, I got my first tattoo and the person that made me feel that way was my own dad. I joined a gang. I got 3 X's on the back of my leg for straight edge. And he thought I had joined a gang. I was like, no, it's just, you know, besides that, I mean, you always get, maybe not so much anymore, but you would always get stared at for being a little heavily covered, you know, tattoo wise. But I've also always had, before tattooing, I was always in some kind of work where tattoos kind of went along with it. Before tattooing, I used to have like a recording studio. So I used to record bands all the time.
Oh, wow.
So that wasn't like an issue. And then I worked at Chain Reaction, which is a venue here in Anaheim.
Sure.
I worked there for like 8 years. So,
oh, wow.
No problem there, you know? Mm-hmm. And then went on to working at a tattoo shop and then became a tattooer. But like you said about jobs being way more flexible with tattoos, our shop is right across the street from Disneyland. And Disneyland was always a no tattoo policy. Like, you can't show your tattoos. they've lifted that now. So all the people that we tattoo that are workers there love coming to get tattooed now because they can show them off. It's wild. And I mean, if Disneyland's doing it, like, come on. Yeah. It's time.
As long as it's not an Ice Nine Kills tattoo, right? I'm pretty sure they are banned from Disney.
Probably.
I'm pretty sure they are.
Yeah, it's a good call.
So I guess, you know, staying on topic with the tattoos, but kind of shifting it into, you know, another crossover, you know, your art has been printed on shirts and printed on jerseys, and like it has branched out more than just like on people's bodies. So like,
yeah,
can we talk about your connection with Violent Gentlemen and how you linked up with those dudes?
Yeah, for sure. Funny enough, when I first met them, I met Hammer first. We have and had a ton of mutual friends. Like, he would go to Chain all the time, and I would go to shows where like a band he was touring with was playing, you know. Like, it's so wild that our worlds never crossed before this first meetup. I think I met him right when Violent Gentlemen was, they had two shirts out, or they didn't even have them out yet. They were going to have them out. A friend of mine was working with Brian, the other half of Violent Gentlemen. And he's like, "Hey, I know you're a big Ducks fan. You should check this stuff out. Here's like their info or whatever. They're going to have a website soon." It's like, "Oh, rad. This is awesome." I think I might have found their Instagram page and then just talked to them through that. And then we had so many mutual friends that me and Hammer finally met in person. And that was probably around the time that I don't think I had started my apprenticeship yet, but I was getting into an apprenticeship tattoo wise, and just told him like, "Hey, I'm a big hockey fan. Like, I love like what you guys are going to do." And the shirts they had were an Enforce Anaheim shirt and then like just a Violent Gentlemen shirt. And I was like, "I'm super into this, whatever it is, I'm in. Like, I love it." And then we just kind of kept in contact that way. And throughout the years, just saw them bloom. Like, they were progressing so fast, and I loved it. And like, me and Hammer got really close, and we're still super close. He's one of my best friends, without a doubt. And just like realizing the amount of friends that we have in common was like, how did we never meet? This is so wild. We're both straight edge dudes, like, love hockey. Like, it blew my mind that we'd never met. But the first time I worked with them was actually when I graduated my apprenticeship. They were kind enough to do a shirt for me in honor of me graduating my apprenticeship, and it was awesome. I was super stoked. It was like an Anaheim themed one, and it honestly lasted for so long. I couldn't believe it. Like, they were just, they have always been so supportive, so awesome. I love those dudes, and yeah, it's just blossomed ever since then. Been able to work with them for a bunch of shirts, some jerseys, got to do like photo stuff for them too. Like, yeah, they're awesome. Love them.
And it's crazy that they're celebrating their 10-year anniversary. And I remember when like my friend Danber first like kind of introduced me to them, to see where they are now, like actually working directly with like the AHL, working directly with the NHL. Like, they have some of their stores, and like, I know the Vegas, team store, I'm pretty sure the LA Kings as well, they have something in there. Like, it's unbelievable to see what they've done in just 10 years, but like it's kind of cool to hear your story and how it kind of runs parallel, right? Because you were finishing up your apprenticeship almost at the same time like they were starting. Like, it's kind of cool to see where you have gone to, and like, how many shirts is it up to now?
Oh, I don't even know, to be honest. God, it's got to be like anywhere, maybe like 15 or something like that, maybe. I would say it's like between 10 and 15, because sometimes, well, I'll just help them with something small. It's not like a full-on design or something like that. But, yeah, like, luckily, I mean, it blows my mind that there's more than one. So that's already amazing to me, you know?
Yeah. Hell yeah, man. It is kind of staggering to think that they're 10 years in already. Yeah. And they're, you know, blowing up so big. I mean, it's like, you know, with, you know, Radical by, you know, Every Time I Die coming out and just seeing how closely Violent Gentlemen worked with them and having that exclusive variant with them and, you know, doing the same thing with 4 Year and all this stuff. It really is just such a cool thing. And, you know, we're really fortunate to have, you know, forged a relationship ourselves with Hammer and, you know, having him on the show. And, you know, he was really kind enough. I mean, we did we did like a giveaway where he was kind enough to donate. I think it was like $100 gift card to the VG store and stuff. So, like, I mean, they really are. They're such kind and wonderful people. And they're kind of like living proof of why a podcast like ours works. Right. Because they're like the quintessential crossover, right? Like they're doing it all. So, you know, awesome for them. But, you know, in terms of talking like crossover stuff, and we'll get into hockey in just a little bit, but I just want to kind of chat a bit about your love of music and how that started. Yeah. So I guess tracing back again, you know, going back in time once more.
Let's go.
Where did your love for alternative music start? Like, do you remember like maybe the first show you went to or the first band that someone introduced you to that kind of, you know, ballooned into what we're at now?
So I have always grown up right next to Chain Reaction. So that venue is just like, that's my home. I love that place. I will do anything for that place. But I was probably 13 when I first started going to shows. And I remember trying to go to a show. The band was called Narcoleptic Youth, like just this punk rock band. And they're like a local punk rock band. And I remember asking my mom to drop me off at Chain. And she drove me there, saw like all the gutter and like the gutter crust punk kids, and was like, no, turned right around, took me straight home. And I was like, oh crap, okay. That's a bummer. And then the next weekend was this band called Longfellow, and they were playing with Lagwagon. And so I was like, oh, I got to go see this. Like, I want to go see this. And I didn't tell my parents I was going to a show. I just said, I'm going to go to a friend's house. And it was walking distance. So me and my friend went to the show. And I just remember being like, oh, this is rad. Yep. This is cool. This feels rad. And then just after that, kind of met some kids in junior high that were already into like more of the punk rock hardcore world. And that's like when I learned about straight edge. And at 13 is when I started saying I was straight edge. And I mean, still am, you know, but that kind of, once I got into the straight edge world, that's when like music really felt way more like, oh, this is my culture for sure. I love this. And like at the time we had so many good straight edge bands. We had like Orange County had like Throwdown, Adamantium, 18 Visions, like just a bunch of rad hardcore bands. So getting to go to all those shows was awesome. That's really where it spawned from there, and then just kind of expanded. I was in a band at one point. We got to do a little bit of touring. We always got to play with like all our rad friends bands, like with Terror, this band called Like It or Not, Internal Affairs, like all these local hardcore bands, whatever. But it was always a great time and just spawned after that.
Awesome. Now would you talking about, you know, being in like the straight edge culture and like, you know, a lot of straight edge hardcore and stuff like that, would you say like, I guess it's really hard to say, you know, thinking about like how I would classify my listening habits, but like, would you say that you're more of like a hardcore guy and more of like a punk guy, like, you know, I'm sure you listen to a ton of stuff, but like where do your passions like align the most, would you say?
I would say hardcore. Yeah. Okay. Hardcore world is just more like, there's something about it. Like, I just loved more of that, especially because like the straight edge world is so connected to the hardcore world more than it is punk rock, you know?
Yeah.
But not to say I don't love the punk rock world. It's just, the hardcore world is my place for sure.
Yeah, no, I totally get that. I mean, like, when I was listening to this kind of stuff, like that's where punk rock is, where like it kind of started for me. Like, was all that like,
yeah,
kind of, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, you know, Fat totally. Wreck and Epitaph and all that stuff. But then from that, though, is where I got into like Midwest emo and, you know, pop punk and all that kind of stuff. And then from there, I got into like melodic hardcore and then hardcore and stuff. So it's like you kind of offshoot, but it always has to start somewhere. So for me,
for sure,
it was like, you know, playing street hockey, like with my buddies. And I'll never forget, my buddy Kevin, you know, brought out this extension cord, a big long ass, probably 75-foot extension cord from his house, plugged in his like CD player boom box and threw on, and I think he threw on maybe like Punk-O-Rama 3 or 4.
Oh,
it's like one of those where it's just like NOFX, you know, Agnostic Front, you know, like all this stuff. And I was like, holy shit, like there's cooler stuff than like listening to like, you know, the Spice Girls and like Savage Garden, you know, like on the radio. And that's like where it all blossomed from. But one of the things I noticed, like in terms of like, you know, hardcore, and whether it's, you know, kind of more punky hardcore or more metalcore, or, you know, whatever you want to call it, is it's like, you just like, you hang on to certain things. Right. Like, so, I remember, you know, the first time I had the pleasure of listening to Knock Loose. Right. So like I was in like an emo phase for like a couple of months, and I'm like, all right, you know, and then someone's like, oh, you got to listen to, you know, a Different Shade of Blue. And I'm like, yeah, cool. And then I listened to that album front to back, and I was like, holy crap, this is incredible. And then like you get stuck on it for like a while. So honestly, that's kind of like the thing about it for me, where I'm just super into it. But I guess one last quick question, and then we'll we got a little bit of a break for our sponsor DraftKings, which I'll read a little ad. I'm gonna read it in my own voice today instead of Macho Man Randy Savage's. But
everyone's mad. That's the only reason people listen to us now.
Yeah, they've been waiting this long to hear.
Yeah.
But let's just kind of, I don't know. We'll say this year. Put you on the spot and say this year. Do you have a favorite record that came out this year so far that you just can't stop listening to?
Oh man, that is so tough.
I know.
It's
tough for everyone, I know.
Good God. Especially for like, dude, I listen to so much music as far as the range of music. Mm-hmm. I will do underground hip hop to super random basement hardcore to mariachi to this 80s synth band to like, you know, it's all over the place. Wow, you really did put me on the spot. Okay,
there is Tom can't answer newer, that question either. Like Tom, oh, okay, if you ask Tom that, he'd be like, and just
start. Just cuts to the sponsor. Yeah.
You know, for what it's worth, you know. Mm-hmm. Just making our guests sweat a little bit is usually something like
that's what I'm doing right now.
All right, how about we do this? This is what
I got one though.
Okay,
you have one.
Lay it on.
The one I can think of is actually more of a recent one, but I love it. Is this guy who goes by Sam Fender? He's a UK artist. He's kind of got like a think of like a modern day Bruce Springsteen. Maybe Gaslight Anthem,
okay,
Killers vibe. I don't know. Love it's like that. This dream poppy sound, like, but it's pretty aggressive too, and like, it's rad. I actually really really dig that album. It pumps me up every time I hear the first two songs. I'm like, yep, this is it. Hell yeah,
awesome, sweet. Yeah, definitely something for us to check out. Awesome. No, yeah, I appreciate it. Listen, put you on the spot and you delivered. That's all we can ask for. But so before we jump into a little bit of hockey talk, which, you know, we always love to do, we just want to kind of shed some light. Well, not that we need to shed some light on DraftKings, because everybody knows about DraftKings, but we're super stoked to have them as one of our main sponsors here at the Hockey Podcast Network. And, you know, the NHL season is kind of, you know, we're deep into it now. DraftKings Sportsbook, they're an official sports betting partner of the NHL, and they've got like a really unbelievable offer, and they're celebrating the greatest sport on ice, better than curling, better than figure skating. It's hockey. We love it. And check it out. New customers, you can bet just $1 on any NHL game, and you can win $100 in free bets if either team scores a goal. So whether the Ducks score a goal, the Sharks score a goal, doesn't matter if it's a one-time clapper or a sweet deflection. It could either be like an NHL 94 style wraparound. Doesn't matter. But however that lamp goes off, you win. So if Sportsbook isn't available in your state yet, don't worry about it, because DraftKings won't leave you empty-handed. Everybody can play for huge cash prizes all season long with DraftKings Daily Fantasy Sports Contests. And DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with their first deposit. So check it out. Just download that DraftKings Sportsbook app now. You're going to use promo code THPN, the Hockey Podcast Network, THPN. Throw down $1 on any NHL game and win $100 in free bets if any team scores a goal. So either team on the game you're betting on, if they score a goal, awesome. And I mean, you watch hockey, someone's going to score a goal. It's incredible. So this week, one puck in the net nets you a big, big win with promo code THPN. And that's at DraftKings Sportsbook. Again, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. And you must be 21 years or older, New Jersey, Indiana, Pennsylvania. Only new customers. Only minimum $5 deposit, $1 wager required. One per customer. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? 1-800-GAMBLER. And that's how you read an ad.
Well done,
I'm
Tom.
Sold. You know,
I'm getting good at it. I'm getting real
yeah,
good at
for real,
it.
Dude.
I'm getting good at it. So
he definitely added that 94 wraparound.
That was good.
You, absolutely, man. Did. I mean, like,
that
look,
was
you,
the move. Like, if you just did that wraparound, you automatically scored.
That's all you That's did. True. And the best thing about it is if you played NHL 94 or 95 as the Hartford Whalers, you scored a wraparound goal, you would just hear Brass Bonanza, but like a weird, like 8-bit version of it. It would just be like, love it.
Love it.
Love me some early NHL games. So, now that we're talking about the NHL, you know, we got ourselves a West Coast homie loving West Coast hockey. And I say all the time that the only reason I even ever knew about West Coast hockey when I was growing up was because of the NHL games. Cause you know, as a 9 or 10 year old, I wasn't staying up watching, you know, the Islanders play the Kings or the Sharks or anything like that.
Of course.
So,
right. Yeah.
So,
you know,
the only reason I could ever talk about Timu Solani or, you know, Paul Kariya.
My other boy.
Yeah, there you go. See, but let's talk a little bit about that, you know, kind of 90s Ducks team, right? Because I mean, gladly. Like they were something else. So I guess the first thing just to back it up is the unbelievable idea that a Disney movie could come along and born out of that is a professional sports franchise. So when did you start following the Ducks? What do you remember from your first game? And obviously you're a Kariya Solani guy. So let's talk about them too. But please.
Yeah. So I've never been to a Ducks game. Just kidding. technically, I was actually, believe it or not, for a quick second, a Rangers fan before the Ducks were in town. I got introduced into hockey through another friend, like a kid in the neighborhood, because his dad was from New York. So he was a Rangers fan. I instantly fell in love with goalies. And I fucking loved Mike Richter.
Of course.
I thought Mike Richter was the shit. I was like, oh my God, this guy rules. Like, what a badass. He gets to wear the pads and the helmet, like the mask, you know? So that was my introduction to hockey. I didn't have a jersey or anything like that. And I only really got to see hockey when I was at his house. But then Mighty Ducks came along, the movie. And I was like, whoa, this is dope. And, fell in love with it more, just like I'm sure a ton of 90s kids. Me and the like local neighborhood kids would play street hockey. I had a net. Me and my brother were both super into it. So we had a net and we would take our net and the roller skate maybe like 4 or 5 blocks down with the net and play the kids there. And they had a net. So we would just do a little street hockey game, and it was the best. I loved it.
Now,
so that was my introduction to hockey, and then the Ducks coming to town. Oh, my God. Like, when the Ducks came, like, became an actual team, it was – my parents didn't get it. Well, obviously, my parents are, you know, they are immigrants. They are from Mexico. They do not know anything about hockey. So they were just like, what are you watching? what is this? And little by little, not that they ever fully got it, but understood that me and my brother loved it. So I remember my dad taking us to a game that first year at what was then called the Arrowhead Pond, Anaheim Arena, and then Arrowhead Pond. And he was just like, this is wild. You know, me and my brother loved it. Seeing jerseys on the ice, Ducks were getting creamed for sure. Like, not a solid team to start with, you know, but eventually they got there, you know. They got some players, key players. Paul Kariya, obviously, was like Kariya. And then before Solani, I loved Oleg Teberdowski, who is who traded to the Jets for Solani. And I loved Oleg because it was number Kariya was number 9, Oleg was number 10. So I was like, oh, 9-10, that's rad. Then we traded Oleg Teberdowski, got Solani, and I was like, oh, 8-9. Oh, that's cool too. And it just obviously that worked out in our favor with Solani. So those were the two that were definitely just like childhood idols for sure.
Now I'm just so curious because, you know, the NHL Mighty Ducks didn't like come to fruition right after the first Mighty Ducks movie. So like, Mighty Ducks 1 comes out and you're like, oh, this movie's great. Like, I'm going to start playing street hockey. I love hockey now. And then all of a sudden Mighty Ducks 2 comes out and there's like that grand reveal at the end of the movie where like they skate out onto the ice wearing like this new Ducks jersey. Yep. And that's the jersey that the NHL Mighty Ducks wore like for the first couple of years. Like,
it's crazy.
What was that like being a kid? Like, holy crap, like we're getting a team. Like, this is happening. Like, that had to be honestly, unreal.
Honestly, I thought it was like that for every team. I was like, yeah, they probably have a movie out there of the Dallas Stars, and like, you know, I'm sure they made a movie of the Rangers and Islanders. Like, yeah, of course, there's something like that out there. Didn't make sense at the time. I was just like, this is normal. And then eventually grew up a little more because when the Ducks came to town, I was 7. I was 7 years old. So once I kind of got more into actual hockey, like realizing like, oh, we're getting made fun of because we're based off of a movie. Like, oh. Oh, okay, this isn't like it is for the Maple Leafs don't have this problem, you know. So it was pretty mind blowing for sure to have a team based off of a movie. But I didn't know any better, and that was my hometown, and I'm just like, yeah, these are my boys, you know. I never got into the Kings, even though they had been around for a minute. I think just because I was introduced to the Rangers, that was my hockey introduction. And then not long after, Ducks came to town. So just kind of like, oh, there was no gap for me to fall in love with the Kings. Or, you know, we're in Orange County, which is next to LA County, but I didn't really know any Kings fans either. So just never affected me that way. But once the Ducks came, I'm like, yep, I'm in.
Yeah. And now I'm like making the parallel because you mentioned like, oh, goalie's got the pads, but like you forgot the most badass part of the goalie equipment, which is the goalie mask. Like,
yeah.
And when you think about it, like Ed Belfour and like Felix Potvin and like some of those like guys that first introduced like designing
artwork.
Epic goalie masks.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is that kind of like a bucket list item for you as an artist, like to have an NHL goalie come and reach out to you and be like, yo, design a helmet for me?
For sure. 100%. I've got to do like, I've done Eddie Belfour's Eagle mask tattoo wise. And the guy that got it, I believe he's from Chicago. He has this rad photo of him holding out his arm with the tattoo with Eddie. And like, he's just like giving the thumbs up. I'm like, oh, that's so cool. Like, that's amazing. You know? And I've done like a good amount of goalie mask tattoos and I love doing them. I've been asked to do some actual masks, not by anyone professional yet. Would love to do that. That's definitely a goal for sure. Hoping we can get there one day.
Well, I'm sure until like a couple of years ago, a goal was probably like, man, I would love to design a jersey that's like on the ice. And then this happened. So like,
yeah,
that was actually worn by the Ontario Reign. And I'm sure Tom has no idea that the Ontario Reign actually play in California, but
Ontario.
Yeah. No clue. Different Ontario, but the most badass AHL jersey, like hands down, has to be, like, takes the prize.
Appreciate it.
And like that, seeing the VG on there too, like it just like all the pieces came together and it's just so epic. And like, you know, sometimes teams come out and they have these like cool concept jerseys, but they never actually make it onto the ice.
Right.
But like they played a game in that jersey.
Whole game. Yeah. So I was, you know, I got asked through VG, like without them, like I couldn't have done it. But like I said, we always work on random projects together. This being one of them that they have a really good relationship with the Reign, and they've got to do like, they've done like bobbleheads with them for giveaways and like just different themes like that. And when they came to me with this idea, I was like, dude, I would love to do this. And I assumed it was just going to be a jersey that they wear for warmups and that's it, which is already still super cool. Like the fact that there's even going to be a jersey like that to me is huge. So then they told me like, no, they're going to play in them the whole game. And I was like, whoa, that's gnarly. And not only that, but so I went to the game with Hammer and Brian, a Violent Gentleman. And when we walk into the arena, they're giving something away as you walk in. And I just assumed it was like, I don't know, like just an Ontario Reign shirt or something. The Reign straight up made like sublimated jerseys of that design give to the crowd. So if you walked in, you got a version of the jersey, not obviously like the stitched and patched jersey, but just like a practice jersey that's like printed on. We didn't know they were doing that. So I was like, whoa, even seeing that, my art on that, I was like, this is pretty gnarly. And then as soon as we walk in, dude, people are already wearing them. I'm just like, whoa, this is crazy. I was not expecting this. And then they also had a shirt made of it that they were selling in the team store, which is super cool too. I couldn't believe it. And not only that, but when we got to our seats, started looking at the scoreboards and whatever, and everything was wrapped and had that artwork on it. And they did like an animated version of it. They did like, they killed it, dude. It was pretty unreal. None of us were expecting any of that. They went above and beyond for sure. And that was super cool. Watching the players come out wearing them, like, oh, that was that one got me a little bit for sure. I felt like such a proud dad. I was just like recording everything, like, oh, that person's got it was awesome. It was
as you should.
Thank you, appreciate it. Yeah, of course. It was never in my wildest dreams that I think like, you know, professional team would be wearing a jersey I helped make. Like, like that,
right?
That was not something I ever thought, you know, like a goal had always been like to do artwork for the Ducks. And I did get to do that. That was amazing. Mm-hmm. That was a childhood dream come true. The jersey is like a step above. That was unexpected for sure.
So I'm sure.
Do you have an actual one?
Yeah. Like,
do. I have one coming with my last name and my favorite number. So that blows my mind. I can't wait. Can't wait to rock that thing.
So that being probably like your hockey prize, like the top kind of thing that you've ever seen in hockey, but I'm sure a close number two, if we travel back about 14 years, would be getting to see them Ducks raise that cup. So what do you remember about that? I mean, like I said, that's, you know, it's going back a long time, but I mean, you know,
sadly a long time.
Yeah. But I mean, but you know, the interesting thing about that is, right, so that was like, and I might be incorrect, but I think, was that Solani's last year playing when he won the cup, or did he play another year?
No, he played after that. Yeah, he played after that. But
I know like the juxtaposition is so interesting because you had Solani, which he must have been at that point probably in his late 30s.
Yeah.
And then you had a 21-year-old Getzlaff on that team as well, right? And now
with hair.
And, he right, had hair. With hair. And now he's the old man.
I know.
The, you know, of the league. So, but it's give me a little bit of insight about that. Do you remember, you know, where you were when they won the cup? Yeah. Did you get to go to any of those, you know, the cup final games? Did you get to,
I got to actually see
any of that live? Yeah,
for sure. I got to go. So I remember when they were going on the run. I mean, we're a Southern California based team. Like, we're always going to get hated on just because out of market hockey team. Like, sure. It's just not, you know, and the Kings had been around for a good minute and never really did anything. And they had Gretzky that didn't pan out for them. So I always felt like, man, the Ducks have a lot to prove. And the only way to ever get any kind of respect from like another hockey fan is you got to win a cup, you know? Mm-hmm. And, so I remember when they went on that run, I was very, I definitely was like hopeful, but also I got used to them breaking my heart. So I was just like, all right, we just got to ride this wave for as long as we can go and see how it goes. And every series, man, they just like kept turning it up. And I'm like, yo, this team is looking so good. Like, with Pronger, McDonald, like they were some, Bowen, like Niedermeyer, the brothers, like,
yeah,
man, it was unreal. J.S. Shagir, like he was just crushing it. I just remember once we got to the final that I was, part of me was like, this is it. This has to be it. Like Senators were good, but I, a lot of it was just wishful thinking, I'm sure. And just praying that was the year, but I got to go to the first game that was at Honda Center. Unreal. Like, it's hard to describe the feeling. It was just unreal. It was amazing. After that, I didn't get to go because tickets were expensive. And at that point I was old enough to like, I was making my own money and stuff, but it was not like, oh, I can't spend that much money on a ticket. There's no way.
Yeah, of course.
But I remember the game when they won it, we were watching it. I actually had band practice. So my band was practicing, but I told them like, yo, we have to be done before the game starts. They're like, yeah, for sure.
Hell yeah.
So we finished practice. We got a bunch of food. We're just hanging out, watching. And once it felt pretty secure that we were going to win that game, that was the cup game. Mm-hmm. We left my friend's house and went straight to Honda Center because we knew like, just it's going to be cool even if we're not inside of there. Like, just being around it would be great.
Yeah.
So we did that. And sure enough, like, I got to see the last part of the game at a restaurant across the street. And after that, everybody just lost it. Everyone ran outside cheering, ton of hot, like, cars honking. And, like, it was unreal, dude, honestly. Like, I could not believe they actually pulled it off. And as for as great of a team as they were, I was just like, you never know. It's hockey. There's never like a sure bet, you know? Mm-hmm. But I remember feeling the next day after they won, I went and bought like all the newspapers that had it. Cause I'm like, yo, this is California's first cup. Like, that's a big deal. There's three hockey teams in California and none of them have ever won a cup. Like, yeah, I'm going to remember this moment in history. So I went and bought all the newspapers that I could, that had like anything Ducks related. Mm-hmm. And I just remember always loving that we had that over Kings fans.
Yeah.
And Sharks fans is like, hey, California's first cup. You will never be able to beat that. You know, like,
even though
the Kings have two cups now, they'll never have the first. You know,
that's true. That's true.
So that's what I stand by.
For sure. And like I said, we seem to have lost Mikey, but he'll be back at some point. But anyways, you know, yeah, there's definitely something to be said about that. And, you know, I think these days, at least, you know, when you talk about like team markets and stuff, you know, even the West Coast being like a strange market, like at least like, you know, the Kings have won cups, you guys have won cups.
Yeah.
But when you really look at like the real strange markets, right? Like when you get into Nashville and, you know, like all of these places where like you would think hockey would never be, they just have the most passionate, like, almost rabid fans. Like, it's unbelievable.
It's unreal that. So first of all, I am not a Nashville fan because they beat the Ducks all the time and they have kicked us out of several series. So, but I will say this, they are so diehard. Their fans are very diehard. There's no way around it. Like, you go to a game there, just everyone's into it. Whether they're like, you know, not actual fans and they just want to rep hard that they're Nashville, like, whatever, that's still fine. Mm-hmm. It still creates quite the atmosphere to be at those games.
Yeah.
But going to, first time I got to go to a Vegas game, dude, was unreal. Like, that arena goes off. Like, say what you want about that team. I know a lot of my friends personally hate the Knights. I get it, I guess, but I'm just like, dude, they do their entertainment, their fans, they are, every game felt like a playoff game. I've been to maybe three or four Vegas games now, and every game feels like a playoff game. It's pretty wild.
Yeah, and I totally got that wrong, man. I was one of the people when, you know, Vegas was going to get a franchise, I was like, oh, all you're going to get are going to be like, you know, people, you know, losing 50 grand in the casino and getting comp tickets and like all this stuff. And I really, truthfully, I thought it was going to be like, you know, one of those experiences in like Toronto and Montreal where it's just a bunch of suits and businessmen and, you know, no one caring, but man, was I wrong. And of course that, you know, that, that run that, that Vegas went on, you know, was just like unprecedented. And I, you know, I kind of hoped that we were going to get some of that magic with the Kraken this year, and it doesn't really look like it as of right now. He's back. There he is. Look at this guy.
Whoa. Yellow shirt. What happened.
But welcome no, back. Like, yeah, but it, you know, obviously still a long season ahead of us. It doesn't look like the Kraken are going to share that magic yet, but something, just something about that. You know, I just, you know, I say it all the time whenever we, you know, we get on this podcast is, you know, anything that can, you know, elongate the reach of hockey is good for me. So, you know, even though Mikey and I are diehard Islanders fans and the Islanders are playing trash hockey right now. I mean, granted,
dude, 75% of the team is sick.
That's so wild. Speaking of, I was talking to Nick about this earlier today. Weren't Rangers Islanders today and canceled, right?
Canceled,
And that's wild.
But I mean, honestly, we could talk.
I want to chime in real quick because
chime on in.
If I was Nick and a Ranger fan, I'd be pissed because the Islanders and Rangers played only a couple of days ago.
Agreed. When, that's what I said.
Yeah. When there was already a bunch of positive cases on the team.
Right.
And like after that game, Cizikas now tested positive. So like they were on the ice with a bunch of the Rangers. Like, the NHL handled it so poorly, and I get the Islanders were opening their brand new arena, but like, is that more important than their the health safety and of the players? Safety of the players?
Top. Yeah.
Yeah. You're not, I mean,
was. Yeah. I was just in New York, maybe a little over a week ago now, and I was trying to catch. I thought I was going to be there long enough to catch either the home opener for the Islanders, but I wasn't there. I had left like maybe a day or two before, and I wanted to see the arena. Like anytime I'm in New York, I definitely try and catch.
Of course.
A Rangers game, a Devils game, or I haven't when in New York, I haven't gone to a Flyers game, but that was almost an option too. So I wanted to see the new arena. That would have been great. But I was just telling Nick, I'm like, yo, they just played not that long ago and a lot of their players were out. I mean, that just seems like, it's going to spread if anybody on the Rangers gets it. They've been playing other teams. Like,
it's, you know, as a hockey fan, you hate to see it. Right. I mean, like even though, you know, you could paint it as being an Islander fan and being like, well, hey, we should have canceled all these games just in the interest of like, you know, playing at full strength with the capacity to win games. But even further than that, you should have caught it earlier and you should have just canceled games and said, okay, you know, let's get back to being safe. But again, you know, for those that aren't watching on YouTube or on Twitch and that are just listening to this, it's all about the money. And unfortunately, that's where their head is at. And is that the right call? Of course not. But in hindsight, you know, what are you going to do? But, you know, having said that though, you know, professional sports after COVID is a completely different entity. And it's kind of hard to, I shouldn't say it's hard to be critical because you should be critical of these kind of things, but being critical is tough just because again, it's, it's unprecedented. Like, you know, whoever makes that call, right, you know, probably has, you know, person A in their ear saying, hey, we got to cancel these games to make sure, you know, the safety of our players is intact and all this stuff. And person B is like, I mean, if we cancel this game, we're leaving, you know, $300 million of revenue on the table and all this stuff. So, you know, no matter what call was made, someone was going to be upset.
Someone's disappointed.
Right?
So, yeah, without a doubt.
But yeah, but you know, you can't have bubble hockey anymore. So that's just not an option.
Right.
But it's tough. Mm-hmm. It's a tough thing, you know. But
definitely.
But I mean, you know, any Islander fan or any NHL fan would have told you that the right thing would have been to, you know, pull it a couple of days ago when, you know, we were down seven players. But nonetheless, at least they've made the call that they needed to now. And, you know, we'll get back to it. But in that kind of vein, though, you know, this season has been, if you look at like the standings and all this stuff right now, this has been a very interesting season so far. Right. But I think that's what you love about hockey, isn't it? It's just like,
exactly. You never know.
You really don't.
No one expected the Ducks to go on whatever game winning streak, or Terry to go on a 15 or 16 point streak. Like Getzlaf is crushing. Like crazy. Everybody thought Getzlaf, oh, this is probably his last year. Dude's putting up so many points. Like, and he's looking great and skating hard. Like, it's kind of surprising. I would not have expected the Ducks to be where they're at. Granted, they've lost the last couple games, but there's so many teams that you're just like, was not picturing that. The Panthers, like when their first, like whatever games, like crushing it, like, okay, sure. Mm-hmm.
And the Atlantic is a very, very interesting division to look at right now. Right. Cause you've got, you know, the Leafs doing Leaf shit, you know, when they're like, you know, great the first quarter or half of the season, and you know what's going to happen there. Well, Leafs fans, let me not put you there, but yeah, you know, the Cats are up there, of course. You know, the Bolts would be up there, but like,
right,
the fucking Red Wings, right? Like,
oh yeah,
perennially for over the last probably 8 or 9 seasons, just bottom dwellers, just the catfish of the league. All of a sudden, you know, sticking it out. But I got to tell you, honestly, the biggest surprise, and I hate to say it, being Islanders fans, is how bad the Islanders have been. Like, no one went into the season, I don't think, being like, yeah, after 20 games, the Islanders would have 12 points. Now, granted, we knew as Islanders fans that we're going to be on a long stretch on the road, and it was going to be a little difficult there. But, like, you know, did anyone think that we were going to be 3 points away from being the worst team in the league?
Did not expect that at all.
No. But, not again, all. Got 60 games of hockey left. Oh, here we go. Time.
He's just so negative. Like, so honestly,
how could you not be, dude? You got 12 points,
dude. The long road trip. You're forgetting that. Yes, they played the first 14 games on the road, but a lot of those games were like they had 5 nights off in between games, 4 nights off between games. Like,
very tough.
They're on the road, but then like they would go home for a couple of days, then go back on. Like, their road trip wasn't just like, 14 games on the road. Like, it was also just a terrible schedule besides that. So, like, I'm not going to write off the Islanders yet. And, like, you know, the last 4 games probably shouldn't have even happened. Like, we literally had half of our AHL team up. Like, you're not going to beat the Toronto Maple Leafs. You're not going to beat the New York Rangers. You're not going to beat these like powerhouse teams with an AHL team. It's not going to happen. So,
Mean, I'm not trying to sit here and say that, like, you know, I thought the Islanders were going to get out of that road trip unscathed, but I mean, like, Michael, have to be honest with me. There's no way that you expected them to have 12 points.
No, there's a lot of guys that are underperforming right now, like Kyle Palmieri, Matt Barzal. Like, there's guys right now who are not contributing. And, like, Zach Parise hasn't put up a lot of points, but, like, at the same time, he's grinding it out every night, and he's not one that I'm, like, overly concerned about. It's some of those guys that I just mentioned that need to do a little more.
Who do you guys have in net?
So we have Sorokin, who played for years in the KHL and was like one of the best goalies in the KHL. And then he alternates with Varlamov. So him and Varley are kind of holding it down. Right. Varley was hurt for the first portion of the season too. Yeah. So there's been some tough challenges that have been thrown at the Islanders, and it really comes down to how they bounce back. And we got to remember, Trotz is our coach.
Exactly. What a coach. I feel like, being a hockey fan for so long and stuff, like they always say teams that get hot, like in December or towards the end of December, that break, that's when it's really like, all right, go time. Here we go. Yep. Like you'll start to see whether or not they can make a push. It's not too late. You never know who else is going to go.
I'll always go back to this from now on as a fan. Uh-huh. Like the traditional Islander fan would have just wrote this season off, because Islander fans are super negative to begin with. And they would have been like, I'm done with this team. Fire Barry Trotz, trade Matt Barzal. Like they would have gone on and on. But then you have to remember, the St. Louis Blues won the cup like 4 years ago and were literally the last team in the NHL. Yep. Like it could happen. You sneak in as an 8 seed, right?
That's
true. When the Ducks won, were they an 8 seed? Or was that the Kings that were the 8 seed?
No, the Kings were the 8 seed.
Yeah.
Kings were.
Like, dude, it can happen. Like in the NBA, if you're the 8 seed, there's no chance. Like you're not gonna win.
Yeah.
But in hockey, the NHL, if you just sneak in, good luck. Mm-hmm. Like, it's anyone's game at that point.
Yeah.
And I mean, and the truth of it is too, it can swing. It can swing. If the Islanders, get healthy and get hot and, go on a 7 or 8 game point streak, all of a sudden you're back in the thick of it. And I think, again, that's the brilliant thing about hockey. I mean, you look at it now and it seems insurmountable. I mean, the Caps are 20 points ahead of us, which is, it's a tough thing to, it's a tough bridge to gap or gap to bridge, say, however, but realistically, if, like I said, a 10 point swing could happen. Right. And we could get back into the thick of it in the wild card. So it's there, it's possible, but at any rate, probably one last quick question for you. And then we'll let you get back to it.
You guys got to go or what?
I mean, well, here's the deal, and I'll be real with you. Are you straight from the Path fan?
Yeah,
of course you are. Everyone's straight from the Path fan.
Tom's great. Yeah,
Tom could talk about hockey for 24 hours straight.
For sure.
And we kind of let him do that, and it was like our longest episode at like 2.5 hours, and we vowed to ourselves to go three, after then. That. have at it, man. But we found our sweet spot at usually about an hour to an hour 15. Anything that's after fair. That, people are just like, shut the fuck up. So
they're really just saying that about you, Tom. They're just
rough.
If Tom talks about wrestling one more time, never listening to this hockey and music podcast again.
Get me on one, dude. I'll talk about Stone Cold Steve Austin at any time. So, all right. I'm going to put you on the spot once more.
Oh, boy.
I know this is going to be a hard one to do, because I'm sure you have done probably thousands upon thousands of pieces of work in your career. But what would you say, if you had to pick one of the pieces that you've done, was the one that was the most... I don't want to say like fun, but I guess what I'm trying to say is, what piece have you done that you can recall as like being the one that meant the most to you? Maybe just because it was a time in your life or something that was intricate or something that, really meant something to someone else. But could you pick something, one particular piece that you can recall that you did that just sticks right out to you?
Let me ask you this, tattoo or art related, like not tattoo?
Whatever meant the most to you.
Okay.
Truly.
Ooh, that's definitely tough. Can I give you one of each?
Please. Absolutely.
Okay. All right. So probably one of my, the top favorite tattoo I've done is actually a George Parros in a fight stance that had Honda Center under him and like a Wild Wing Ducks mask, on my client, Chris, who Chris is awesome. He gets the coolest tattoos. And that's one of them. And that to me, like, when I got to draw, when I was drawing it alone, I sent it to George. I'm like, look what I'm doing tomorrow. He's like, who is getting that? And then I'm just like, this is like, this, that one meant a lot because I'm an Anaheim kid, grew up going to Ducks games. So that means like the world to me already. When I first started getting tattooed, I wanted a hockey tattoo. And everyone I asked to do a hockey tattoo was just like, I don't do hockey tattoos. Like, I don't know. So that's honestly what got me into drawing hockey stuff. I was like, all right, well, I love hockey. I can draw some stuff. And yeah, that felt like a pinnacle moment where I'm like, this is wild that there are people out there like me that want to get something like this tattooed on them forever, you know? So I would say that is one of the most meaningful tattoos I've got to do for sure. Awesome. When it comes to artwork, I'm a little torn. That one's a little tougher. Just because the one I got to do with the Ducks meant a lot for sure. But if I'm thinking a little deeper than that, it's probably the artwork I got to do for, in the collab I got to do for Topo Chico. That one hit home really hard because, I mean, they've been a brand for like over 100 years. They're like 125 years old now. And yeah, it's, you know, they're from Mexico. My family, my grandparents grew up drinking it, my parents, like, that one really struck a nerve just because it's on a bigger scale, and I would have never thought that was like possible. Just like the jersey with Ontario Reign, I'm just like, all this stuff seems so out of reach that the fact that it's happened almost feels like it's fake. It seems very like, oh, there's proof of it, but man, I still, every time I see it, I still smile. You know, I'm like, damn, that's wild.
So, love to hear that.
Yeah, it's kind of a tie between doing artwork for the Ducks and the Topo Chico one, to be honest. Those are two that I just hold so high.
For incredible. Sure. Now, have you ever done a wrestling tattoo?
Yeah, I've done like a couple, I've definitely done a Stone Cold tattoo, several of his skulls. I'm trying to remember what else. Oh, Jake the Snake. That's the other one. Nice. I got to do. Yeah.
Love that.
I love like wrestling, like images and logos. Mm-hmm. Oh, so yeah. Rad, especially 90s. Like, mm-hmm. Oh man, they were getting wild with the colors. And I would love to do more of those, to be honest.
Well,
now, Tom, I got one question to wrap it up.
All right.
So being an artist, I want your opinion.
Whoa.
The fisherman jersey.
Yay or nay? Yay.
That's all.
See? I'm about it, dude. I'm about it.
All right. Awesome. That's all I needed to know.
Hey, so, yeah. I mean, look, you know, the fisherman is the one of the most divisive things.
So do you guys like it?
I love it.
I love
it. Do most Islander fans like it or hate it?
It literally is 50-50.
It's the most divisive thing. Either like there are people that are like, how dare you take the crest away? You're taking away the lineage of all of the cups we won. And then there are people that are like, you know, this was great. You know, like it was, you know, it was a different thing for a different time and it didn't last very long. For sure. Like it's kind of like, If you're a 90s kid, like Mikey and I are, like it reminds you of being a kid and being a child. For sure. Like, you know, and you were honestly one of those old heads, but you know.
Yeah. Honestly, the 90s is when like the NHL was starting to get kind of like, hey, let's try some new stuff out. I mean, dude, we'll go back to what's come around now with the reverse retros, like Ducks, Wild Wing, like that one, when it happened, everybody hated it. Nobody was into it. Like that was like, and you couldn't even buy it. It was only for players. Like you could not buy that jersey. They didn't sell it. Mm-hmm. Now that it's a back, dude, you see that jersey at Honda Center a lot. The Kings, they're the one we call the Burger King that they had, like Gretzky wore and stuff.
Yeah.
Dude, those were wild. I mean, is a time to try. So
I mean, I'll tell you the truth. One of my favorite Violent Gentleman shirts is the old school 90s Canucks mock.
Oh, like so good, the skate.
Yeah, I love.
Oh, I thought I was wearing it for a second.
No,
I was wearing it. Dude, no joke.
How do you not know what you're wearing?
Because it's the same color as the shirt that is that.
But it's a different thing.
Whatever. I actually did wear it in my Christmas photo, so I'll send that to Hammer.
Yeah, there you go. That's a great one. I love that one. And honestly, the Whalers one is just
so
sick. Love that one too. Yeah,
love it. Sure. I really want to get some like 90s, just like straight t-shirt jerseys, you know, like those ones. Cause I can't afford real jerseys, but like, I really want to get like a Mike Modano jersey. I definitely want to get like a Paul Kariya, like t-shirt jersey. I just want to show everyone that like I cared about hockey in the 90s enough.
That's fair.
That's all I want to do. But Gus, thank you so much for taking the time to be on this show with us, to take time out of your busy schedule. Do you want to real quick, just before we shoot out, tell us where we can find you, how we can get in touch with you for any inquiries, and how we can get in touch with the shop, all that fun stuff. Lay it on us.
Sure. Please. Yeah. Yeah. You can find me on Instagram at GusJ714. From there, you can go to my website, GustavoHymas.com. Got a bunch of stuff on there. You can find the shop I work at, Torch Tattoo, Anaheim, California. Yeah, you can catch me online doing all my stuff.
Now, is it too late for people who are doing some last minute Christmas shopping to get some prints in time? Because those prints I'm about to add on my Christmas list.
I appreciate it. Luckily, still got some time. I don't know the official cutoff date that won't get to you in the U.S. by Christmas. It's sometime in December. It's like December 11th or 12th, something like that. So you got a little bit of time. Yeah, you got some time. It's definitely a busy time for me. This is like when I do, besides tattooing, like art commissions are really high right now. I always do the VG warehouse sale. I'm either tattooing there, selling my own stuff. I've DJ'd it in a Santa Claus outfit before. So it's a busy time. Luckily there is a little bit of time up until then. So yeah, if you're a hockey fan, you want some artwork or music fan, I got that stuff. Check it out.
Do the right thing, folks. Support your local artists, or even if it's not local, support artists, support people that are doing what they love, and support people who are being creative. I mean, like, that's what you got to do. I mean, if you don't, we don't get to do these podcasts, because Gus won't be able to take an hour out of his time to do this, because he's going to be like, I can't eat. I can't do anything. So support people who are being creative always.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. Absolutely. Gus, again, thank you so much for taking the time to be here with us.
This was a blast. Honestly, absolutely, so much fun. Like I said, I wanted to go the 3 hours, but whatever. You guys got to go. It's fine. Next time.
We'll get you on for another hour and a half, and then collectively you'll be at 3, which will be more.
Hey, good call.
It'll be more than Tom, unless Tom comes back on the show. Then we'll probably be at like 5.5 collective hours for him. But we'll just keep stretching it. It's great. But
Gus, for sure,
have a great night. You too. Everybody out there, like I said, go support your local artists. Do the right thing. And until next time, it's been Tommy V and the world famous Mikey C, who's, I got to point to him the right way. There he is.
No one even knows where you're pointing.
I don't know where I'm pointing. Yeah, he's up there. There he is. world famous Mikey CLT, who has logos all over UBS Arena. He's world famous, guys. Eventually, we'll have to pay him to do this podcast. It's going to suck, but it's fine because it's worth it. So, Gus, again, thank you again. And,
thank you, guys.
Have at it, man. Thank you guys so much. Peace.
Peace.
Take good care now. Yeah.